VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McKee. With the United Nations Security Council meeting Monday to discuss threats to international peace and security, the U.S. is working to ramp up diplomatic pressure on Russia over Ukraine. AP correspondent Ben Thomas.
U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield tells ABC's This Week the Russians will have to explain themselves to the Security Council, specifically the massing of Russian troops near Ukraine. She adds the Western allies are going to be prepared to listen, but won't be distracted by their propaganda. Russia's veto power and its ties to other Security Council nations, including China, make any formal action unlikely. Meanwhile, the head of Russia's Security Council, Nikolai Petrushev, is rejecting Western warnings of an invasion, calling it completely ridiculous, and adding Russia neither wants nor needs war. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Russia's foreign minister claimed NATO wants to pull Ukraine into the alliance amid escalating tensions over the organization's expansion and fears Russia is preparing to invade Ukraine. In comments on state television Sunday, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov also challenged NATO in a claim to be a purely defensive structure. Russia's massing of estimated 100,000 troops near the border with Ukraine has brought increasingly strong warnings from the West that Moscow intends to invade its neighbor. Russia, in turn, demands that NATO promise never to allow Ukraine to join the alliance and to stop the deployment of NATO weapons near Russian borders, as well as rolling back its forces from Eastern Europe. Again, Russia's foreign minister is claiming NATO wants to pull Ukraine into the alliance amid the escalating tensions over the expansion and fears Russia's preparing to invade the country. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. North Korea did in fact confirm on Monday it test launched an intermediate range ballistic missile capable of reaching the U.S. territory of Guam, the North's most significant weapon launch in years, as Washington plans to respond to demonstrate it's committed to its allies' security in the region. The official Korean Central News Agency said Sunday's test of the missile was aimed at selectively evaluating the missile being produced and deployed and verify its overall accuracy. It said a camera installed at the missile's warhead took an image of Earth from space, and the Academy of Defense Science confirmed the accuracy, security, and effectiveness of the operation of the weapon system. North Korea said the missile was launched toward the waters off its east coast and on a high angle to prevent it from overflying other countries, but it didn't get any further details. The United Nations Secretary General says the world body has received credible allegations that more than 100 former members of the Afghan government, its security forces, and those who worked with international troops have been killed since the Taliban takeover of the country on August 15th. The Secretary General Antonio Guterres says in a report obtained Sunday by the Associated Press that more than two-thirds of the victims are alleged to result from extrajudicial killings committed by the Taliban or its affiliates. He says that this is despite the Taliban's announcement of general amnesties for those affiliated with the former government and U.S.-led coalition forces. Landslides and flooding caused by heavy rains killed at least 19 people in Brazil's most populous state Sunday, while high waters forced some 500,000 families from their homes over the weekend. Three people from the same family died when a landslide destroyed their home, according to the municipal government, while four other people were rescued by firemen. Four children died in Sao Paulo State, and the state government said four other people died in Franco de Rocha. Deaths also reported in other regions. The Cincinnati Bengals were the NFL's worst team 2 years ago. Now they're headed to the Super Bowl to play the Los Angeles Rams in the Rams' home stadium. Matching the biggest comeback in an AFC championship game, the Bengals rallied from an 18-point hole to stun Kansas City 27-24 in overtime Sunday for the first trip to the big game since the 1988 season. The rookie, Evan McPherson, made a 31-yard field goal to win it. Then the Rams overcame a 10-point second-half deficit and took the NFC crown with a 20-17 victory over San Francisco. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. Thank you.
Today is Monday, February 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chin Edwofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Britain's Prime Minister says Russia is planning what could be, quote, the biggest war in Europe since 1945, unquote.
The plan, in some sense, has begun. That's what our American friends think. And you're seeing these provocations now in Donbass. You're starting to see this explosions and so on. I've been warning about it for a long time.
The UN warns that Africa's Sahel region is facing unprecedented food insecurity.
A toxic mix of factors is causing food prices to soar across the region, according to the World Food Programme. Cattle rustling by terror groups is just one small factor.
And a look at the role played by African-American women in the American Revolution and movement for civil rights. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Russia is extending military drills near Ukraine's northern borders after 2 days of sustained shelling along the contact line between Ukrainian soldiers and Russian-backed separatists in eastern Ukraine. This, as Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Russia was planning what could be, quote, the biggest war in Europe since 1945. In an interview with the BBC on Sunday, Johnson said that sanctions on Russia in the event of an invasion would go much further than previously suggested in public. He said that the United States and Britain would seek to cut off Russian companies' access to U.S. dollars and British pounds if the Kremlin orders an invasion of Ukraine. Johnson spoke from Germany, where he's attending the Munich Security Conference.
The plan, in some sense, has begun. That's what our American friends think. And you're seeing these provocations now in Donbass. You're starting to see this explosions and so on that we've been warning about for a long time. And I'm afraid to say that the plan that we're seeing is for something that could be really the biggest war in Europe since 1945, in terms of sheer scale. So we have to use the tools that we have. And those tools are economic sanctions against Russia. And the role of the UK has been to make sure that we impose the toughest possible sanctions, and that's what we're going to do, not just hitting the associates of Vladimir Putin, but also all companies, organizations of strategic importance to Russia. We're going to stop Russian companies raising money on UK markets, and we're even, with our American friends, going to stop them trading in pounds and dollars.
That's British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. As tensions soar over a possible Russian invasion of Ukraine, Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky called for Russian President Vladimir Putin to meet him and seek resolution to the crisis. Associated Press correspondent Karin Chamas reports.
I don't know what the President of the Russian Federation wants, so I'm proposing a meeting. Zelensky made the proposal during a speech at the Munich Security Conference. The President, who had earlier met with US Vice President Kamala Harris, also said Russia could pick the location for the talks. He also added that Ukraine will continue to strive for a diplomatic resolution to the crisis. There was no immediate response from the Kremlin. Zelensky spoke hours after separatist leaders in eastern Ukraine ordered a full military mobilization in preparation for what they called an immediate threat of aggression from Ukrainian forces. Meanwhile, Western leaders have been making increasingly dire warnings that a Russian invasion of its neighbors appeared imminent. I'm Karen Chamas.
Western leaders are calling for an end to the shelling on the front line in eastern Ukraine as fears are mounting that Russia is likely seeking a pretext to reinvade its smaller neighbor. A war between Russian-backed separatists and Ukraine has been simmering there since Russia seized Crimea in 2014. This, as President Joe Biden says he is, quote, convinced, unquote, that Russian President Vladimir Putin has decided to invade Ukraine, but that diplomacy is still on the table until that happens. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
President Joe Biden spoke to the American people on the Russian threat for the second time with a grim assessment.
As of this moment, I'm convinced he's made the decision. We have reason to believe that.
For the people of Kyiv, Biden also had this warning.
We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people. We're calling out Russia's plans loudly and repeatedly, not because we want a conflict, but because we're doing everything in our power to remove any reason that Russia may give to justify invading Ukraine and prevent them from moving.
Biden said diplomacy is still on the table until Russia invades. Top U.S. officials kept up their deterrence and diplomacy push Friday. Vice President Kamala Harris met with NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg on the sidelines of the Munich Security Security Conference, stressing the U.S. is coordinating with its allies hourly. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin visited a military base in the Polish town of Powiedz with his Polish counterpart. Austin also confirmed that the United States plans to sell 250 Abrams tanks to Poland, viewed as part of an effort to bolster NATO's eastern flank in response to Russian aggression. President Biden and Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky have refused to be provoked or to give in to Russian President Vladimir Putin's military threat. Former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor told VOA. William Taylor is with the United States Institute of Peace. He spoke with VOA.
I am sure President Putin thought that by rattling the saber, by putting all these troops on the border, that he would get President Zelensky and President Biden to fold, to cave, to give concessions. And he's been disappointed. He's been surprised, I imagine. I imagine President Putin is really surprised at the resistance, at the resolve, and at the calm of President Zelensky. I'm sure he thought he would rattle President Zelensky, and he hasn't.
Meanwhile, in Moscow, at a news conference with his Belarus counterpart, Alexander Lukashenko, Russian President Putin told reporters, "Right now we are seeing a deterioration of the situation in eastern Ukraine." He said Russia's massing of troops along Ukraine's borders are drills that, in his words, do not threaten anyone. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Ukraine is a significant player in global food security, but the possibility of a Russian military invasion and naval deployment in the Black Sea threatens to disrupt Ukrainian grain exports, potentially affecting global supplies. Oksana Bedratenko filed this report, narrated by Anna Rice.
Ukraine produces over 6% of the world's grain supply, according to the Observatory of Economic Complexity. That's why there could be a ripple effect felt worldwide if war breaks out between Russia and Ukraine, says food analyst Alex Smith.
The countries that are the most dependent on Ukrainian wheat were Lebanon, which was about 50% of their total wheat consumption in 2020. Came from Ukraine. Libya was a significant number, and so was Yemen. But all three of them have had significant conflicts recently, are already dealing with high food prices and already dealing with significant food insecurities.
If grain supply disruptions were to occur now, it would shock world markets, say experts. And with an ongoing drought in South America, the world depends even more on other sources, like Ukrainian wheat. Food analyst Smith believes the disruption in the supply of Ukrainian grain might benefit Russia, since countries like China might turn to Russia to get grain. Russian President Vladimir Putin and China's President Xi Jinping recently signed an agreement in which China agreed to allow imports of wheat and barley from all regions of Russia. Analysts hope a disruption in grain supplies can be avoided. Otherwise, a food crisis could be a real possibility. Not only in the region, but far beyond. For Oksana Bedratenko in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
The UN World Food Program says Africa's Sahel region is facing unprecedented food insecurity from soaring prices, terrorist activity, high regional demand, and COVID-19. The WFP's representative in Burkina Faso warns the situation is critical, with millions more people facing hunger in the coming months. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
In large areas of Burkina Faso, terrorist groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda move freely about the countryside, attacking civilians and security forces alike. While the conflict has affected millions in various ways, for Saidu Sawadogo, it meant losing his livestock and forcing him to flee to Burkina Faso's capital, Ouagadougou. Yes, my animals were stolen, he explains. He says terrorists came in the early hours of the morning in large numbers and took around 1,000 sheep. A few days later, they came back to the market and took everyone's cell phone away. And that's when he decided to leave, he says. Sawadogo is not alone. Meat prices are spiralling in Burkina Faso's markets because of rampant cattle rustling by terror groups. Mahamadou Barry runs a livestock market in Ouagadougou. Barry says that animal prices have increased over the past 3 years due to insecurity. He says many people were killed and animals were stolen. 3 years ago, the price of animals started at $300 to $430. Today, the price starts at $700. Before, we earned more, but it's a lot less these days, he complains. A toxic mix of factors is causing food prices to soar across the region, according to the World Food Programme. Cattle rustling by terror groups is just one small factor, says Antoine Renard, the WFP's country director for Burkina Faso.
There's a high demand in the region, so that's one aspect in terms of market dimension. There's a second one, which is the conflict, and of course it has an impact of how can you still continue to harvest, how can you make sure that your market are up and running in terms of Burkina Faso, and the last one is also the economic impact of the COVID-19.
The WFP says a record 28 million people are food insecure in West and Central Africa. It also says that in Burkina Faso, Mali and Niger, hunger could increase by 50% in the coming months, growing from 5.5 million to more than 8 million. The Sahel's more than 2.5 million displaced by conflict, like Soumaila Sawadogo, are especially vulnerable. He says the people in the area around the site for displaced people, where he lives, have been very helpful. But he says the problem the community has is one of lack of water and food. We only have help from the UN. They helped us with houses and food, rice, oil, beans and condiments. Meanwhile, the WFP says it will have to cut rations to those displaced by conflict if it does not receive more funding soon. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
A new seasonal forecast for the drought-stricken Horn of Africa shows many parts of the region can expect a good rainy season. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The forecast by the World Meteorological Organization is good news for millions of people suffering acute hunger because of poor harvest due to several years of consecutive drought. However, WMO spokeswoman Claire Nullis says that good news is coupled with warnings that people should still prepare for what she calls a worst-case scenario.
The March to May rainy season is really, really important for many countries in the region. It accounts for about 70% of the total annual rainfall. And so obviously, if there were to be a renewed failure of the rains, there would be massive socioeconomic consequences.
The World Food Programme says 12 to 14 million people in three of the worst affected countries, Somalia, Kenya, and Ethiopia, are facing severe hunger due to the devastating drought across the Horn of Africa. The WMO says southern to central parts of the region have the highest chances of receiving more rain than normal at this time of year. Countries include Tanzania, eastern Uganda, northern Burundi, and eastern Rwanda. However, it says western South Sudan and central and northeastern Ethiopia are likely to receive less rain than usual. Given the below-average rainfall the past three seasons, meteorologists say a wetter-than-normal season does not mean the region will immediately recover from the impacts of drought. Nullis says countries in the eastern part of the Horn should prepare for the worst.
In the regions worst hit by drought, the current trends are comparable to those observed during the 2010 to 2011 famine and the 2016 to 2017 drought emergency. There's obviously a delay in between planting and harvesting. Next harvests don't start till about August, and so, you know, we're not going to see any immediate positive impact.
More than 250,000 people died in the Somalia famine between 2010 and 2012, more than half children. More than 6 million people, half of Somalia's population, were ravaged by the severe 2017 drought. Few people died, though, because the international community responded quickly to the acute hunger emergency. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, Ethiopia has started generating electricity from the controversial mega dam being built on the Blue Nile. The milestone was reached Sunday morning when one of the 13 turbines of the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam started power generation in an event officiated by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. The dam will be Africa's largest hydroelectric dam upon completion, with a generating capacity of 6,500 megawatts. It has been a source of tension between Ethiopia and Sudan and Egypt. Egypt fears a quick filling of the dam will reduce its share of Nile waters. Egypt's foreign ministry said Sunday that Ethiopia's move is another, quote, breach, unquote, of the agreement of principles that the three countries signed in 2015. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. The History Channel premiered a documentary 2 years ago entitled, quote, Black Patriots, Heroes of the Revolution, unquote. It tells the story of the Revolutionary War through the African-American experience and highlighting their contributions in the founding of the United States. So often, the American Revolution is interpreted as a white struggle, and if blacks are included, they are male. Reporter Angie Omar discussed the issue with Dr. Janet DeWard-Bell. She's a social justice advocate, activist, executive coach, and motivational speaker with a doctorate in leadership and change from Antioch University. She's also the author of Lighten the Fires of Freedom, African American Women in the Civil Rights Movement. It's a history of the struggle of Black American women, an issue that's not well covered in the stories about the struggle for legal and societal equality in the U.S.
I think that is a great omission in American history, not only about the absence of the coverage of Black American males, but females. Black Americans have always been involved in the freedom struggles in this country, because if there's one thing that we understand is that freedom is not free. And when the opportunity has come to participate, blacks volunteered for the American Revolution. Blacks volunteered to be involved in representing this country in all aspects of the military from that time onward.
In your book, Lighting the Fires of Freedom, African American Women in the Civil Rights Movement, you're discussing that during the Civil Rights Movement, African American women did not stand on ceremony. They simply did the work that needed to be done. Yet, despite their significant contributions at all levels of the movement, they remain mostly invisible to the larger public. What do you think is missing in raising the awareness in today's American culture about the struggle of African American women?
The contribution of African American women has been omitting because of two factors, right? The intersectionality of gender and race. But African American women from the civil rights movement, from the Civil War onward, whether you're talking about Sojourner Truth, who's probably one of the most famous people, whether you're talking in Harriet Tubman during the time, that we have not been appreciated for the contributions we've made, but we have continued to do that. So African American women have founded colleges, have been involved in, really have forced their way into the movement for equal rights. We were not always welcome at the beginning at the parades in Washington, D.C. and others, but we stood our ground and we joined in anyway, because we knew that our future, the future of our children, of our families, and of this country, were based upon how much involvement we as Black American women were involved in the politics of this country. We have been a force all the time, whether we were acknowledged or not.
That's Dr. Janet DeWard-Bell, a social justice advocate and author of Lighten the Fires of Freedom, African American Women in the Civil Rights Movement. She spoke with reporter Angie Omar. Record numbers of new coronavirus infections have been detected this week in New Zealand. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
New Zealand's daily COVID-19 infections have passed 2,000 for the first time since the pandemic began. On Sunday, health authorities reported 2,522 new community cases of the virus. 100 people are in the hospital, which is also the highest total of the pandemic, although officials have said none are in intensive care units. Some of the world's toughest disease control measures, including border closures, have insulated New Zealand from the worst of COVID-19. Nevertheless, the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern says her country is entering a new phase of the pandemic. The Omicron variant is spreading rapidly, and she's urging more people to get a third vaccine dose.
Get a booster if you haven't already. While 1.9 million New Zealanders have had their booster, 1.2 million who are due have not. It's very clear that the job is not done. Omicron is here and increasingly entering our homes. Make your booster the first thing you do to protect yourself and vulnerable people you know from getting the virus.
94% of eligible New Zealanders have had two shots. About two-thirds have had a booster shot. Dr. Samantha Marsh, a senior research fellow at the University of Auckland, believes those rates will increase as the virus spreads.
When Omicron really takes hold of New Zealand, in Auckland, we're kind of getting there at the moment, but still the rest of New Zealand, you know, they don't have the case numbers that we have here. New Zealand is very unusual in that we really haven't seen it up close and personal, what huge numbers look like and how devastating that can be. And so I would hope that as that reality hits closer to home, we might see an increase in numbers.
Despite a surge in cases, New Zealand plans to begin a cautious and staged reopening of its borders, which have been closed since March 2020, in a week's time. A long-held zero COVID-19 strategy has been abandoned as the South Pacific country of 5 million people confronts the rapid spread of the Omicron variant. It's recorded about 31,000 infections and 53 deaths since the pandemic began. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins the forces with Africa's premier men's basketball league to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the field in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, presents the latest sea level rise projections for all U.S. states and territories by decade for the next 100 years and beyond. The report, called the Sea Level Rise Technical Report, projects that the sea level along the U.S. coastline will rise an extra 25.4 to 30.5 centimeters by 2050. NOAA, in a press release, says that rise in sea level is about equal to what was experienced in the previous 100 years. Along with projecting rising sea levels, the new report also contains information on tide, wind, and storm-driven extreme water levels that will affect current and future coastal flooding risks. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a great day.
Voice of America. Wow.
Washington.